everybody. Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here. And look who is in studio. ESPN's Courtney Cronin has made her way to Minneapolis. How are you? Great to see you.
This is wild. Like, this is such a throwback to our days recording inside of TCO, sequestering whatever room we could get into. And it's wild to be here. I love your setup, though. This is nice. We have like real functional mics instead of me holding onto the ones that were connected into the Zoom and clicking them all around. But it's awesome. I'm proud of you. You've leveled up with all of this, and this is an awesome setup.
Yeah. Those who have watched the YouTube channel for a long time know the progress of this and how janky it has been at times. but now we're here. We've got it all figured out, and it's great. So
and you've got video games over there. You can't see this on camera right now, but his Nintendo, Super Nintendo's over there. I see all the cartridges. Where's your N64?
The N64 is over there.
Is it GoldenEye in the cartridge?
That is Ken Griffey Jr.'s Slugfest. Okay. And then there's a PS2, couple of TVs over here. So yeah, we've made it into the I am still kind of a child type of studio.
I like it.
But you don't have much time because you've got to catch a flight back to Chicago. So I want to dive into what the Vikings are doing with you, because I've gotten your takes on the Chicago Bears throughout the offseason, what they're doing. Now we all know exactly what they're doing in drafting Caleb Williams, but I haven't really asked you your opinion on what the Vikings are going to do on draft night. And even just seeing this come together from afar with Kevin O'Connell, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, this is the completion of the plan. For wrestling fans, the Cody Rhodes, it was finish the story. Did you follow that at all?
I'm not a WrestleMania person, but I tried.
Okay, people would know what I meant if you like wrestling. It was finish the story for Cody Rhodes. It is finish the story for the Vikings on draft night. But do you believe in it? Do you believe in what Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell have done here to get to this point?
I think it's the right approach, given everything that's transpired the first 2 years of this regime. So remember, it's competitive rebuild, and you and I were both skeptical. I think a lot of people were about how that was going to manifest itself. Could you actually be rebuilding behind the scenes and still field a competitive team? It worked for 1 year. It, for a number of different reasons, did not seem to work, at least in terms of wins for more than a 7-10 team last season. But for as aggressive as they've been this offseason to go get Houston's second or get Houston's first round pick, so now that they have two, and to be in position to trade up, which I know that teams are going to make that difficult because it's so obvious what they need to do and what they are positioning themselves to do. It's just, where do you get in that top six of the draft order? Because you certainly can't go any, you need to leapfrog the New York Giants, in my humblest of opinions. But it's the right approach. And if they can just get their guy by packaging what they have right now, just get a quarterback for this year. So you solve one of the hardest things to do, because this team's never, they've never been aggressive in doing that in all the years that we covered the team, and certainly history before that. Like, if they didn't have a first round pick that put them in earshot of what they wanted at that position, they weren't going to try to go give up the farm to go get their guy. And I don't view this as having to do that. So I think this is right along where they expected to be in terms of completing that mission of saying goodbye to Kirk Cousins a month ago, of finding a way to bridge the gap, at least for now, with Sam Darnold, and then being aggressive and being calculated to go get the draft capital they need to ultimately move up. Because, I mean, we go back to the combine. You and I were talking about that throughout the week. Like, that's what we had been hearing that Kwesi was going to have to do and was positioning himself wisely to do, dating back to the time before they let go of Kirk Cousins in free agency.
And Kwesi even really said that today, that this was the plan all along from the time that they first got here, which I believe, because everything lines up that way, including their first offer to Kirk Cousins, which was not that good for an extension. When they got here, they gave him a short-term extension. They tried to do it again. He said no. They tried to do it again. He said no and became a Falcon. All of that points to they've had their eyes on these quarterbacks for this quarterback class, not Will Levis in the last class, not, was it the Malik Willis and Kenny Pickett? They didn't want those guys, so they didn't make that move the last 2 years, but now they believe in this draft class. If you were Ryan Poles, what outcome for the Vikings would you be like, dang, didn't want them to do that? And which outcome would you be like, we'll be fine, we're good? Oh, they drafted him with that? No, we're good.
Well, what does it take to win this division? Or at least just baseline, borderline, like be competitive in this division, you need a quarterback. So any of the quarterbacks that they take, and we know that the Bears are also like, where they're taking Caleb Williams, that's happening, but they like JJ McCarthy and they like him a lot. Think about how many people they sent to his pro day alone, even though you can't, that's not like the end all be all, but I think they sent Kerry Joseph and like a national scout and maybe an area scout to Drake May, like after sending everybody who works in Hallis Hall more or less to USC's pro day to watch Caleb Williams. Like they like JJ McCarthy. They think something's there, but if he ends up a Viking, A, that's not going to shock anybody. And B, I do think that that's going to be something where like, might this be the guy who we didn't want to see go anywhere within the division? So that one would probably be one they're like, darn, or however you did that the first time.
I don't remember.
But the one where they'd be like, whatever. I guess it would have to be a situation where teams are really trying to rake him over the coals and it'd be too much for them to move up and get a quarterback where they effectively during the draft have to alter their plan. I mean, I still think they would take a quarterback, but God, what, this is like nuclear, like worst case scenario. Like what if it's Spencer Rattler in the second round? I still think it'd be Mike. I think it'd be Michael Penix Jr. before then, which maybe they'd look at that and say, that's still a very competitive, that makes you a competitive team better than having a, you know, more of a project at quarterback. But they'd be like everybody else in the division would be happier if other teams were calling the Vikings bluff as like, oh no, like maybe we don't want to move up and really trying to, you know, rake them over the coals with that.
My answer would be if they were to land Drake May, I think if you're Ryan Poles, you're probably a little nervous because even though Drake May has his flaws, he also has his upside. And the upside, along with Justin Jefferson, of a giant playmaking dude with a huge arm, could be really good. And that could compete with Jordan Love and compete with Caleb Williams. If it's Bo Nix, you're probably less intimidated. That doesn't mean that Bo Nix can't win. It's just the ceiling, the upside, the age. Is this guy going to take over games against Eberflus's defense? Like, probably not. And with Drake May, I think if you're Matt Eberflus, you're probably also feeling like, what I want the Vikings to have is somebody that I can scheme against. And if I win, we're going to be fine. Not someone who's going to make me wrong. And that's what I like the most about Drake May in particular, is that there were lots of times with North Carolina where people broke through immediately, or where receivers looked like they ran the wrong route or something. And he just found a way to make plays. That's something you and I did not see a lot of from Kirk Cousins. With McCarthy, I think it might be there, but not quite to the level.
It's such an unknown. And that's, I don't know, it makes him such an intriguing prospect. And I will laugh at all of us, myself included, if all of the smoke that's come out the last 4 or 5 weeks, him climbing up most mock drafts into being, you know, this guy was a second round pick in like mock draft 1.0 from Mel Kiper or whoever it was, Jordan Reed, a couple months ago, late January, right around the time of the Senior Bowl. And then all of a sudden, this guy might be the third or fourth quarterback taken. Like, where do we come? Like, how did we get there? But it's because we just don't know yet what his arm's like and what his arm's going to be like on a consistent basis when he's consistently tasked with picking a defense apart. Like, can he do it? Is there a reason that they didn't put him in that position to do it at Michigan? Like, that's the unknown. And if you have all of these teams evaluating the quarterback prospects the way that clearly the quarterback needy teams are, maybe they know something that we don't. And for the Vikings, if they're able to, like, if it's Drake, Drake May is probably the third quarterback off the board, if not the second. Like, can they actually get there? Do we really think the Patriots are trading out of that pick? I'm not convinced on that.
I don't think so either, unless it's some sort of crazy deal. Unless we're talking about four firsts. What's the legal limit on firsts?
I think it's three. Is it not?
You can do more than three, right? If you had two for this year.
Oh, okay. Sorry. In terms of the years, you can't go beyond 3 years in the draft. But so you'd say like, let's use logic here. You think the Vikings would give up four first round picks?
No.
For Drake May?
No, I don't.
That might be like the worst trade of all time.
Or he could be really good.
Or he could be really good. But there's nowhere out there that has a projection that says, sign off on this trade, Mark and Ziggy. This is a great one. This is going to help usher this team into the post Kirk Cousins era. I just don't see that.
Well, let me try to justify it. I don't believe in it, but let me try. if you think that if he fails, you're getting fired anyway, then screw the next guy.
Yeah, right?
He either succeeds and is amazing with Justin Jefferson and you win and spend all the additional money to fix the defense from free agency, or he's bad and that is someone else's problem in the future. Sorry you don't have those draft picks. Kevin O'Connell does come from the Rams. Bleep them picks. Yeah. I'm just saying the hardest question to answer is Mel Kiper's scenario, which is, do you give up 11, 23 and the next year to move up for McCarthy? And I'll tell you, my take is kind of similar to what you're talking about, where I'm wondering if McCarthy's a tad overrated by the mock drafters and the Vikings might be able to sit and potentially pick him. And I mean overrated by a few spots, but it's almost been an absolute guarantee that you have to move up and get him. And I don't know that that's true. I just know that people who do draft reporting that are maybe a coin flip for right or wrong think that you do.
And that's, it's not a complete apples to apples comparison, but were we not talking about this last year with 1, 2, 3, 4 off the board? Where did Will Levis go? We had to wait a whole nother day till he went off the board to the Titans in the early part of the second round. I don't, again, it's not a complete, you know, scenario, like it's not completely the same, but would I be surprised if he fell there to 11? No. Would I be surprised if Michael Penix Jr. ended up being a first round pick in the top half of the draft? No, I wouldn't be surprised about that either. I'd keep trying to think back to the last time there were five quarterbacks of this notoriety that got this much attention. And you go back to the 2021 draft, that's the last example we had of that. You know, how that draft order fell, by 15, they were all gone. So do teams panic? Do you, if you're a team that's outside of the top 10, if you're like, basically if you're Denver, if you're the Minnesota Vikings, and if you're the Las Vegas Raiders, teams that need a quarterback now, but also down the line, like, what's going to be the trigger for them to get panic? If you see offense go 1 through 8 and then the Bears are there again at 9 and they're like, all right, wide receiver, like, do you start, like, if you haven't moved up, do you try to get there at 10 to where the Jets are? If you're panicking, if you think that, like, if four quarterbacks are already gone, then you think, okay, well, I've got to go get Bo Nix now, or I've got to go get Michael Penix Jr. before, you know, before they're gone by the end of the, by the middle of the first round. So the thought of it taking 3 first round picks, 2 this year, 1 next year, to go get a JJ McCarthy, that feels far fetched. But if it is Drake May, and where Drake May's been in the whole mock draft world the last couple of months, whether it's the 2nd overall pick or the 3rd overall pick, that might be the cost. And I would love to be in the draft room to hear what the Wilfs would say, because your scenario of what if this group is gone? And I don't know if that would mean O'Connell, but like, we had, you know, heard, just like, all right, well, what about Kwesi's job security? We believe it's a 4-year contract when he signed it. Is this going to be something long-term? Do they give him an extension this offseason? Like, who knows? I don't know if they'd be willing to let those things happen in order to screw over the next group, if they might be thinking, hey, we might not be completely sold on who's running our football operation.
No, you're right. There's a lot of dynamics at play, including how much Kevin O'Connell likes one guy over the next. I mean, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah has to say, we love lots of quarterbacks. We don't know if that's true. And there's also another scenario where McCarthy's hype is even more than we thought, and he ends up going number 2 or number 3, and we all go, wait a minute, what? We thought that was Jaden Daniels. And then it's 4 and 5, and either May or Daniels is on the board. That's something that we have not really discussed a lot, is the possibility of either one of them falling. And then do the Vikings have to give up everything to move up and get a better prospect, in my opinion, because someone fell in love with JJ McCarthy? There's a lot of moving parts here.
I think everybody's hoping, if you're the Vikings or any of these other teams further down in the, you know, outside, you know, back end of the top 10, outside of the top 10, that it's like receiver, 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 like that the Cardinals don't trade that pick, that the Chargers end up taking a receiver, that the Giants are like, no, we're cool with Daniel Jones. We just paid him a ton of money. We might as well get him a weapon to throw to. Then, like, if it's 3 and then there's 3 straight receivers taken, might you be in a better position? Or are you freaking out thinking that JJ McCarthy could be the next guy, even though, you know, teams like Tennessee don't need a quarterback, they need Joe Alls. Teams like Atlanta probably need a defensive end. Teams like the Bears, they probably need a receiver, unless there's a defensive end that they really like. And then could you maybe hold on to some of that extra draft capital, because you're not moving heaven and earth to get up to 10. Like, I'm fascinated by that. And a lot of people have asked me just about the Caleb Williams situation, or like, well, where's the drama now? We know it's a lock, like more or less. Does that make it less exciting for you covering the draft or more exciting? I'm like, I think it's more, because now you're like, all right, can we just start the draft at two? Like, can we just like they, I mean, in theory, in reality, they could sign him right now if they wanted to. I think they would end up irritating a lot of people on Park Avenue if they just decided to, you know, circumvent the draft process and take away the allure of having the number one pick and making that pick for the commissioner. But the draft starts at two when we find out who does Washington really love. If it's JJ McCarthy, then like the draft gets flipped upside down and it'll be a wild 90-minute stretch till we get to where the Vikings at least are on the clock at that point if they don't move up.
Folks, we all have smartphones and we know that they are pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we can find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. That's uscellular.com/builtforus.
And Washington is a wild card because that's a whole new ownership. Mm-hmm. It's a whole new management. And we don't really have a sample at all to go back and say, well, this is kind of how they operate. Now, I can't have you in this studio and not do a pie chart. Oh. So you're going to have to do it. I do.
You didn't even
there is a pen and pad.
Yeah, I
there
see.
Okay, if you great. Want it, if you want to borrow that.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, I'm terrible at math. Like, I was not prepared for this. Just so you guys know, this isn't a stunt. I now have, I guess, this. And
where's the pencil?
Yeah, that'll work. That's a pen.
All right, here's a pen.
Here's the challenge.
Now you guys actually get to see me go through the process in real time with him like stressing me out.
This is not that hard, although maybe so. I'll just add a little of that. It's not that difficult. All I want to ask is, since we have four clubs that are in different spots, but all of them have a case for being pretty good.
Okay.
So you've got the Vikings set to draft their quarterback. You have Caleb Williams coming to the Bears, Jared Goff leading a really good Detroit Lions team, and Jordan Love and Green Bay with a young roster to build on. Percentages for each team to win the NFC North 2025. Not next
not
year.
Not this year.
Not this
so next
year,
year.
2025. So that means Caleb Williams year two. Drake May or quarterback X year two. Jordan Love will be maybe a little more expensive. And Jared Goff could potentially be more expensive. And so could that team. So 2025, these teams to win the division. Because right now, if you were doing it, it's a race between the Packers and the Lions. And then... who knows? How good is Caleb Williams right away? We're not sure. Do the Vikings even play their quarterback right away? I would have the Vikings fourth at this moment because my expectation is that they would play Sam Darnold until they went 4-7, and then they would play JJ McCarthy or whoever,
okay. And
they end up with 7 or 8 wins. That's why it's dangerous to give up the 2025 first for the Vikings, because if you do end up with 6 wins and Sam Darnold starts most of the season, you're giving up a pretty high draft pick. This is the calculator is out here. It only goes to 100
because this is really hard for me. I'm not going to get this wrong and be embarrassed like I have been countless times in my math skills.
That's actually what makes it great.
No, it's not, because then you're going to yell at me. Just wait. All right.
That's also true.
All right. Let's see. Some of these percentages might be the same. I just have to add them up and make sure that they don't cheat.
All right.
All right. I'm ready.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. So the best chance I have right now, and this isn't home cooking, but I have the Bears with a 30% chance to win the division in 2025. For obvious reasons, Caleb Williams coming into this team is the missing link at this point, because they've never been able to draft and develop a quarterback in the modern era of the NFL. They haven't had the right infrastructure. And even he realized it, that this is not a normal situation for a number one pick coming in. He's coming into a team that finished with a 7-10 record last year, which, yeah, that's not great. That was the, you know, bottom of the NFC North, bottom of the NFC, middle of the bottom of the NFC. They weren't as bad as the Panthers, but typically when you have the number one overall pick, that guy's going to a team like Carolina.
Right. This is like a 2-win team.
Yes.
It doesn't have Montez Sweat.
Exactly. And I'm a firm believer that they will get something done with Keenan Allen. Like, he's not going to be there forever, but it was a smart pick for year one of a new quarterback. Surround him with weapons that make him better. DJ Moore made Justin Fields better for as shoddy as that looked at times last year.
And Rome Odunze is the pick.
Right? I think at number nine. Although, like, I've talked
whoever they're picking, though, that's another top 10 player.
Sure. Or it could be a defensive end.
Yeah.
Like, to start opposite Montez Sweat, although there are some veteran options that might make sense, I still think they go offense. I think, honestly, I go back to the Khalil Mack trade in 2022, which I know is like ancient history at this point. To me, that was a day that everything started to skew offense in Chicago for the long term. So I've got the Bears with a 30% chance in 2025 to win the NFC North. My next best odds are tied.
Is this a cop-out? This is a cop-out.
It's not a cop-out. It's because you put me under pressure to do math in a very short amount of time when I was not prepared for that.
I'm saying you're not really ranking them if you're giving even odds. But okay, I'll let you do it.
Well, it's the Vikings and the Packers. I have them each at 25% because if I'm looking at Green Bay and the situation they're in right now with Jordan Love, he'll be in year six at that point. He's already like at the top of the NFC North in terms of the quarterbacks that you don't want to face. They clearly found a formula there to make that work. My question mark with Green Bay would just be defensively. And I mean, Joe Barry gone, who knows what this unit's going to be like this year. You'd like to think they're not going to be playing that soft zone nonsense in like critical situations, like, I don't know, 2-minute drill. Anyways, but is there a regression there, or does that defense get back to where it was a couple years ago when they were like just dominating, even like during the Rodgers era? So I think that, you know, they're a team that has shown you, given their draft strategy the last couple of years, of finding, you know, some higher end talent at the end of the first round, in the second round, in the third round, they can get it done. Like, I remember, it's not like the Bears defense was a good defense at the end of the year. They're a top five unit, but I didn't know who half the guys were that were catching passes from Jordan Love in week 18. I really don't. So the fact that they got it done there, I think that this team with the quarterback, that's probably a 10-15 year thing. They've solved their franchise issue with the quarterback spot.
Maybe not 15, but okay. Yeah.
I mean, Jordan Love's been there since 2020.
I guess if he's like 40.
No, he's
possible.
I'm saying like from the time he got there, 2020 till, I mean, realistically that the end of his career could be like 15 years.
Okay. We'll see if he can do it for 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Let's
first
try that. Let's get there first. So then I've got the Vikings with 25% too. So, and the reason I have this here is because I think a lot of the hard things that they had to do with this roster, and, you know, they didn't rip the Band-Aid off. Like, they did this kind of piece by piece. So first it was, you know, saying goodbye to Dalvin, or first it was, you know, parting ways with some pieces on the defense. Then it was saying goodbye to Dalvin Cook. Then it was saying goodbye to Alexander Mattison, Danielle Hunter, you know, Eric Kendricks was in that mix as well. Before that, like, they're going to have pieces. There's still some older pieces on this team. Like, Harrison Smith eventually will have to retire. They may have to, like, you know, yank him out of the locker room. He might be 40 or something, still playing safety. But I do think this is the year that they figure out the quarterback, given what they're armed with in the draft. Mm-hmm. They're in a good spot to go figure out their quarterback situation. They've got an all-star at wide receiver. Just get the deal done whenever they're going to do it. I think that when they get in the spot to compete with the other teams in the division, they will probably be like, I guess this would be like 2-3 in 2025. And then I have the Lions at 20. And the reason I, outside of the math and like trying to figure out, oh, well, somebody's got to be at the bottom of this. What happens when Ben Johnson inevitably leaves next year? Cause like, he didn't want to go to Washington. We know that much, but does the offense change? How does, you know, can Jared Goff, I mean, it's been 2 years now where we've seen him really excel within this team and get to the NFC championship. I think they have another year of that in the midst. I think that what they do with their running game and how active both of those guys were with a multitude of roles that they were served in with David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. And then the offensive line, that's the best offensive line in the NFC North. Defensively, I have questions. I have questions about Aaron Glenn's unit. Like, I mean, we've had questions since we watched them, you know, lose their mind in that Thanksgiving game. Is that defensively, are they going to end up being what like versions of the Bears and Vikings were like in our years where the defense kind of was their Achilles heel. Mm. Can they get away from that? Is this the year where like they're able to, you know, right some of their wrongs from what we saw in 2023? So then in 2025, maybe I'm changing my pick. I don't know. But like, I'll go through it again. 30% Bears to win the division in 2025, which is a lot of pressure. I mean, 4 years into a rebuild to go from like zero to 100, that's probably a standard amount of time, but 30% for them, 25-25 for the Vikings and Packers, and 20 for the Lions. And the math adds up to 100. That's like the biggest accomplishment that I've got.
Not with a calculator. You get no points for that.
No, yes,
please.
I do. Stop like trying to like beat me down.
Well, I mean, I don't think that if you use the calculator, you can really like pimp the home run, right? If you're hitting off a batting machine,
bat flip
not a pitcher, then you can't pimp the home run. Anyway, I like your list though.
Thank you.
I like your pie chart because I think that all four teams' fan bases could put together an entire presentation of why they will be the best in 2025. Will the Lions have added more beef to this, or will they have gotten a little more expensive and had some guys get hurt or whatever happens to teams? It's hard to compete year after year after year.
You're going to have to pay a lot of guys like starting this year with Amon-Ra. So,
right. And then Jared Goff needs an extension. And as you mentioned, Ben Johnson probably gets a job after next season, assuming they don't hold that Washington thing against him. And we saw this, we saw a team rise and then plateau with the Vikings. I feel like Caleb Williams, because his ceiling is the best quarterback in the NFC, that's his ceiling. That doesn't mean he'll get there, but that is his ceiling. That's what puts them in position to be number one. That as much as Jordan Love showed last year, Caleb Williams at his absolute best could possibly be even better than Jordan Love. And with the Vikings, we don't know which guy they're going to pick. So that's harder.
That makes it really difficult.
But you can believe in what they have offensively surrounding this quarterback for the next many years to come. And there's no like shortchanging Brian Flores in this too, because they have his evaluation abilities and his abilities to coach X's and O's. And I just don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think Brian Flores is going to get a head coaching job probably ever again, or at least not for a long time. And that would mean you can continue to build that defense. So the Vikings in 2 years might have not only this great offensive unit with young players, but an elite defense by then that's been built over a number of years. I think everybody's got a good argument. And I mean, you kind of squeeze them together in the right way, as much as I do think it's a slight cop out to have the Vikings and Packers the same.
I should probably do like one's like 27%, one's 23%.
Oh my gosh, this
but that
would have imploded.
About to say, do you realize we would still be doing the math on that, or I would be?
You have about 10 minutes before you have to go for flight. So let's spend those minutes talking about you and I covering drafts from 2018 would have been your first until 2022, right?
Yep.
You covered the disaster trade down in 2022.
No, I covered.
Or did you not? Or were you in Chicago?
I was in Chicago at that point. So I actually pulled them up because I was trying to remember like all of the drafts. And
because you did the combine covering the Vikings, right?
In 2022? I actually switched.
Or is that when you switched?
My last story was on a Friday covering the Vikings. And it was about, I remember it was like all of the traits of a Kevin O'Connell offense. And then like by Monday I was talking about Matt, how do you pronounce it?
Eberflus.
Yeah. Like that. I probably said it like that the first time, but no, my first draft was Mike Hughes, the 2018 draft. Yes. And then my last one was 2021, the Kellen Mond draft, which will always be remembered as the Kellen Mond draft.
Yes. Because folks on the internet called you foolish for suggesting the Vikings would draft Kellen Mond. And then they did, and then it didn't work out. So 2018, what I remember from 2018 is this was the only time I was ever surprised by Rick Spielman. In all the drafts that I covered, we always knew by the time we got there, they're going to draft for need. Here's what they need. And then Spielman would say, well, you guys don't know what we're going to do. And then all of our mock drafts would be essentially right. And at least by the position, oftentimes even by the player. But 2018, I never expected a corner in Mike Hughes. And then after he had a pick six in the first game, Mike Zimmer mocked all of us for questioning the pick because we thought, don't you need some other positions more? And the wrongest I've been about any draft pick for the Vikings was Brian O'Neill. Mm-hmm. When they picked Brian O'Neill and he showed up to rookie minicamp, I was like, no, that's a tight end. That's not a tackle. This guy can't play. And he's obviously great.
Do you remember seeing him? I remember writing a story about how much weight he had to put on when he ate like 3,000 plus calories a day. He was like chugging whole milk and eating peanut butter and jelly. It's something he did when he was a converted tight end at Pitt. And I remember the welcome to the NFL moment when they were practicing inside the stadium at TCO and Brian Robinson just like O'Neal's in his pass set at right tackle, and Robinson just takes his hands and swats him down.
Yes, I remember
like
that
as
really
a swim
well.
Move on him. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a long project. But God, what a steal. Like in the second round to land him there at, what was he, 70? No, he's at 62. And for him, as quickly as he was able to cement himself at right tackle and become one of the best right tackles in the NFL, like, and I remember that press conference when he signed his extension ahead of the 2021 season. Like, it was only a matter of time. And for as much criticism as we've given them for how they've addressed the offensive line, I go back to 2018 thinking, okay, draft for need. Well, you could have used Frank Ragnow there. That was my pick in our ESPN mock draft, my first year that I did that. And, like, you know, the board didn't fall that way. He went to Detroit before the Vikings were on the clock at 18. It was that was a wild time thinking like how that whole thing played out and how, you know, how that whole draft class, excuse me, when they were on the clock at 30, especially given like, you know, I look at some of these players that are on here, like Tyler Conklin, like, isn't that wild? Like how much he's resurrected his career, like how infrequent his role was in Minnesota. And now with the Jets or like, you know, is basically that's where like he kind of blossomed into a really good offensive player. And I'm like, why couldn't the Vikings have done that?
It was sort of ish, like when he got a chance to play when Irv Smith got hurt, because Chris Herndon was not worth trading a fourth round pick for. And so he kind of got the momentum going there and has turned into a pretty good player. I remember him being asked by a media member, what do your tattoos mean? When he gave his press conference, and his entire body is covered with those.
Like, I think it's his whole left side. Is
which
it,
one?
It's like a sleeve and a leg.
Yeah.
And
yeah, which
like,
one?
What do your tattoos mean?
All of them? Every single one?
Like,
yeah.
What's wrong with this person asking me this question? Right,
speaking
now?
Of strange questions, 2000, I believe it's 19, was when.
Yes.
I think that there's like, what is it when you commit a crime, but it's been long enough? It's like statute of limitations.
Yeah.
There's statute of limitations on this. We dared you to ask a prospect about his off-field interests.
Because let's back up here. So we had a game going because, you know, the draft's a long grind.
Day three.
But I mean, well, the whole thing's a long stretch. You start Thursday, you get out of TCO more or less at like 5 o'clock on Saturday night. So to keep us interested, even though I'm, to keep the intrigue going. So it wasn't just like, all right, they drafted this player. Here's a conference call. This was at the time before Zoom, pre-COVID. Yep. So we had like this phone that was like a giant X. Mm-hmm. Like it just had like these speakers with it. So we all stood around it with our recorders and they'd be like, hey, so-and-so's on the phone. It's time to ask them a question. We had a game going and it was, how can you fit certain like football scouting terminology into a question to ask these prospects. We wanted to see what their answers would be. It wasn't me, but somebody asked who got asked if he was a glassy.
That was me. I think with the same player. So all it was, so we're asking questions that we would normally ask. We're just working in some phrases that are extreme football.
Like
so,
extreme scouting phrases. Like, do you have oily hips? Meaning,
yes.
Like, can you flip your hips? Like, do you have good, like, you know, are you versatile in your movement? Mm-hmm. Well, that's usually something that we ask. Who do we ask that to?
Well,
hips came up.
Everything, the integrity of the question was still intact. It was just the phrasing was meant to include some words. So I had to work in glass eater, which I did, asking about leadership to a linebacker. Yep. So a legitimate question. But
even though that's not what a glass eater is. Glass eater is supposed to be like the hard ass guy in the trenches.
Yeah,
yeah, it sort of fit your question.
He totally got it, though, and actually gave a good answer. What we found out was that the more we use these cliches, the more they seem to relate to them because that's how they talk. So yours was to ask off-field interests.
Yeah, like, and what do you do outside of football, more or less?
Rather than work into it carefully, you just walked up to the phone and yelled, what are your off-field interests? And the guy gave one of the best answers I've ever heard in a press conference.
It was awesome.
He went on about his love for wine making. It turned into a future story for you. It was like, we need to do this every year.
That was Cam Smith, the USC linebacker, who never played a down for the Vikings, right?
Yeah,
he had a congenital heart defect that I believe they found during his COVID year. I think he got COVID
and went to the doctor, and that's when they found
it. So he was a rookie in 2019. So he played a little bit then. He's a special teams
guy.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
But
then,
like 2020, it was in August when we were like waiting for training camp to start, I want to say. And they found out from a doctor's appointment that he had like some pretty serious heart defect that like ended his football career right then and there. But before that, he and I had a long conversation about his apprentice. I don't even know if it's called an internship, like more like an apprenticeship at this winery called Melville Winery in California. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me about the science of winemaking, of how you ferment the grapes and all of this stuff. And I ended up talking to the winemaker who I became friendly enough with. Like whenever I'd be out, I'd be like, hey, like Melville's on. I would send him a picture of the bottle of wine if we ordered it. And it was a neat story. I really enjoyed that.
Did you know that Cam Smith has taken up photography?
And
he was at training camp last year, like doing photography.
Oh, that's awesome. Good for him.
I think he was doing it for the Vikings as just some sort of like thing that he's trying to do. So a guy whose life was saved by getting COVID and then getting checked out, and then try to come back, didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so a fascinating story from the draft. Anyway, before we wrap up,
COVID year. And it was just so unprecedented. Like, I remember I went to Chicago for the pandemic. I stayed at my mom's house and I sat in the same spot day three on the couch in the family room covering how many draft picks that day?
Oh, that's right. 100.
Three fourth rounders, two fifth rounders, two sixth rounders, and four seventh rounders. So Rick Spielman's logic on this was that you don't want to, you don't want to bid for guys in college free agency, especially this year when we didn't know what the roster limits were going to be, how, you know, the expansion of the practice squad, if we were going to even have a season. This was April of 2020. So 2 days after, they draft Justin Jefferson, they draft Jeff Gladney. And the Jefferson story is still one of my absolute like all time favorites. This like zero star guy going to, you know, the Vikings laughing their heads off when Philly ends up taking a wide receiver one pick before that clearly did not pan out the way that Justin Jefferson had. But then day three, there is like, they kept trading back and kept trading back. And at this point, like we're all like in a group chat and just being like, are we serious? This draft's going to be 90 hours long. And at some point, my colleagues at ESPN, like my editor's like, I see that you have all of these picks. I'm going to ask Jameson Hensley, who covers the Ravens, who had like five picks that year. He's like, he's going to help you write some of these blurbs on guys that I like. They had no Brian Cole. Remember that? He didn't even play in the NFL.
He was cut before the end of camp.
He was cut. Yeah. Like,
and it was a shortened camp.
But
I don't know what went wrong there. That maybe that's an investigatory story.
But I do remember that, like that year specifically, like Brian Cole, for example, I can still remember the draft story. His father was a policeman. I think he played in the police athletic league because we were on this Zoom. We were all still learning how Zoom worked that year. And getting to ask these guys questions was, you know, it wasn't nearly as fun as the, are you a glass eater? Are you, you know, tell me your off-field interest. But we got a lot of good stuff out of that draft. And I also want to say, that was the next year, my last year, when Cam Bynum from when he was out in Lake Tahoe and he did a jump, he ran off the dock of his Airbnb that he was renting and did a backflip.
Oh, yes.
To celebrate him being drafted. I thought it was kind of cool.
Most awkward question for me was Jalen Twyman. Now, if you remember, Jalen Twyman did not play in 2020. He thought he was going to be a first round draft pick, goes in the sixth round the next year. And we were asking him about taking the year off and not playing college football. And I asked him if he had any odd jobs or anything. And he's just like, no. And I'm like, okay.
Your logic was that I know exactly what this was. You asked him about it. Give me a minute. Like, I can't even keep a straight face in this. The way that you phrased the question of like, did you do anything like have any odd jobs? I worked at McDonald's.
Yes.
And he was like, what are you talking about, dude? I was training for the NFL. My agent's Drew Rosenhaus. And then Yeah, he shot that one down very quickly.
Yes, I said, you know, I worked at McDonald's when I was in high school. Did you like have any odd jobs? Well,
the way that your delivery, I think I had to go camera off for a while because I was laughing so hard at that.
And the hype around Jalen Twyman, a person who never stepped on the field for the Vikings and also got shot, which probably hurt his chances at that. But the late round hype was really something.
One of our former beat partners was all in on the Jalen Twyman hype train.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. As many were. Well, anyway, you now are late for this.
We gotta go. Okay.
But thank you for stopping by.
Thanks for having me. Back this to Chicago. Fun.
And I hope that you have more fun draft stories beyond just Caleb Williams, but number 9 could be very interesting. And we're going to be updating that pie chart all the time.
He's going to frame this, actually.
Yes.
It's going to go in the middle of the wall.
Put it right
here.
Back there. Yep. For the next time you stop by. So thanks everybody for listening/watching. And thank you for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Tell them the story about the memoir shot me.